Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on the Content Call-Out today. We have such a great guest today. We have Tyler Chisholm from Clear Motive Marketing, as well as Collisions YYC, his own podcast. And we had such a great conversation with him that we forgot to press, and by we, I mean me, forgot to press record. So please enjoy the episode, guys. We had a great time recording it.
So. It's hard to maintain relevancy too, especially with where we are in our lives in the world right now. Like, who friggin' knows what's gonna happen in February? We all might be dark and cold. And
well, who knows? It will be dark and cold. Like, I had a whole
We can guarantee.
Yeah, I know. It's Calgary. It's gonna be light at 8:30 in the morning, and then dark again at 4 in the afternoon or 3:30.
Yeah.
I had a whole bunch of episodes recorded pre-COVID.
Yeah.
And then I had a bunch of guests call me. They're like, I don't know if now something I said is insensitive. And so we went and put a little just recorded in the bag and said, hey, these were recorded pre-COVID. So if anything sounds a bit off, FYI. But all the episodes had value. I didn't want to throw them out.
Yeah.
But there was all of a sudden, like, the guests that were on top of it are like, oh shit, what did I say? Like, everyone got very sensitive very quick.
Yeah. I moderated a panel about music, specifically hip hop music, 2 weeks before Black Lives Matter blew up. Yep. And it just seemed so tone deaf after that. I was like, do we use this? I don't know.
But did you use it? Did you go live with it?
We did. We just, like, again, put a disclaimer saying, I don't know if disclaimer is the right word, but just a note saying this was recorded a couple weeks ago. The content would be different if it was not. And then, here's the donation for the Minnesota Freedom Fund.
I think, that's the thing. Like, as long as you put in those, like, caveats, people are usually, like, pretty good about it. So, anyways.
Again, see, this is the problem with just chatting, right? You just start chatting.
And then oftentimes I'll be
like, shit, I forgot to hit record. And like, okay, we'll let the audience in on it. Yeah,
that's exactly.
I love it. It's fun to be a guest. So thank you for inviting me. Because when you're the host all the time, it's a very different mindset. Like, even getting on here today, I'm like, oh, I have to get ready and prepared. What are they going to add? Like, it's just such a funny, different mindset of, like, from being on one side or the other side. I love it.
But, I know. Well, you know what? You host 2 podcasts, Tyler. So thank you for coming on the Content Call Out today. You're a busy guy. You got 2 yourself.
I do. It's funny. I was just chatting with my social media manager today, and one is definitely becoming less. Like, it kind of was got me started, and now Collisions YYC is kind of taken over. And even when I talk to people, I'm immediately fitting in, like, where they fit into that podcast. And we were debating, and one's just going to become what it is, just literally a hobby side project. Not like the other one isn't a hobby side project, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
One's going to have more focus because it's just getting more traction and seems to be really resonating with Calgary and Alberta, where the other one was just more general interest, which, as you know, is there's a million of those out there. If you don't niche down, you're just another person with a microphone.
100%. So, you know what? Let's just go into it. Tell us about Collisions YYC and why you started it.
Well, this is a bit of a long-winded story, so I'll make it short as I can. I met a gentleman named Kevin Crow, who's the SVP of strategy over at Longview. Kevin was introduced to me through a friend that I'd had on the other podcast. So the podcast is, this is all relevant. So I'm going to have a coffee with Kevin, and Kevin goes, Tyler, I really wanted to start a podcast about Calgary and business. And he goes, I'm talking to all these business leaders, but none of them are talking to each other. Because classic Calgary, everyone's like head down doing their thing. No one's out there telling the story. I said, oh, that sounds interesting. You should do that. He's like, well, we should do it together. I was like, okay, I have a podcast. I'm good. And so it was kind of a little bit of banter. But through the conversation, he's an incredibly interesting guy, from running ultra marathons, like 240-mile marathons. Like, normal people don't do those kind of things. Started his own charity, gives away. Have you ever heard of Give a Mile?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kevin started Give a Mile.
Oh, wow.
Through inspiration, through a friend who was passing and just realizing that people can't come and see them and spend time. And
guys, so let's give a mile.
Yeah, fair.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just explain it for the audience.
Oh, yeah. We just did the classic audience. Oh, we know what it is, but you guys probably have an accumulation of travel points. And I think statistically, there's like billions of travel miles and points sitting out there. He built a charity that you can donate those points that then they use to purchase flights for people to go visit family members during end of life. So it's just a fantastic, like, way to capitalize on something that could be borderline on being wasted sitting out there, but then channeling it through a family who might reach out and say, our father's passing away, but he lives far away. The whole family can't afford, or his wife, or depending on the situation. So they sponsor and create. I think they've given over close to 700 flights in the past, like, 5 years that they've given away to allow loved ones to be together when someone's passing.
Yeah, I actually have a friend who was a recipient of a flight, and it meant the world to her because it was very sudden and she was in her early 20s. And you know what? Not everybody can afford a flight home in your early 20s, especially when you're starting out. So it meant the world to her. So
that's so good to hear. So you meet the guy that does this, who's also, I think he was employee number 9 at Longview, and now they're 1,500 employees. So just to really, so anyways, we do a podcast with him to talk about his life and running these marathons and how he kind of lives, like what's his mantra. And at the end of it, we stand up and we shake hands and he goes, all right, so Tyler, I think we should do this podcast together. Like we should do it. I felt a bit like imposter syndrome. I said, Kevin, who am I to have a conversation with business leaders, like the real movers and shakers? Like I just felt like I didn't have the right to be there. And he kind of takes my hand for the extra long handshake and kind of like machoed me into it. He goes, Tyler, do you think when I sign up for a 240-mile race, I'm not a bit nervous? I don't think I shouldn't be there. He's like, come on, like basically like step up. And I looked at him, I said, all right, you got me. And it was the best decision. Like I look at that as a true example of leadership. He pushed the right buttons and kicked me in the butt the right way. He started sending me guests through his network and Collisions kind of took off. So it's a bit of a funny story and I love to tell it because I didn't want to do it. And it was the best yes I ever have said in the last couple of years. I'm so thankful to Kevin for kicking me in the butt and kind of shaming me into it.
I think that's amazing. And I think it's something that a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of just people in general deal with, which is kind of that feeling of imposter syndrome. Like, I don't belong here. Other than getting kicked in the butt by someone, how do you overcome that?
I had this conversation with my wife a few years ago. She said to me, she goes, I made some comment about confidence. And she's like, Tyler, what do you know to tell me about? You're always confident. I said, no. I said, I'm nervous. The difference is I just take the step anyways. So I don't know if that's a formula, but I think there is part of it where being nervous and feeling that anxiety is what lets you know it's real. It's that next step and that little bit of inner like, okay, I'm going to take the step, not thinking that there's some mythical place where you're not going to have those nerves or not feel that, but taking that step anyways, being adaptable, being resourceful, and putting yourself into it. And that's how I've overcome it. I know that's pretty loose, but it's over the years of just like, oh, okay, well, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And then you just start to get a little more trusting of your own abilities, but it took time. Like that's a lifetime journey right there. I just summed up in 4 sentences.
Well, it kind of has to be, right? Because like when we were going through your bio, you were saying you came to Calgary because you wanted to get into aviation, didn't do aviation. And then you launched your own fitness business, which is so completely different. And then you pivoted from fitness to now you own a marketing agency, Clear Motive, and you host obviously these 2 podcasts, but you also have a marketing agency. So mm-hmm. I mean, like those are very 3 big flips.
Yes. And the funny story, which I never tell, and which most people look at me and they go, I grew up on a farm in Southern Quebec. So I grew up on a farm, learned to fly, moved to Alberta, couldn't get work, got into fitness because honestly, I was just passionate about it. I loved it. It was right when the personal fitness movement was coming in where personal training was becoming popular and kind of right place, right time. And I had a science degree because I did that to set me up to be more of like the pilot who just didn't have the basics, like that actually had more of education. So the fitness world was actually pretty easy to me because I had the science background. And then honestly, I think fitness and marketing are a lot like it because you're always meeting people that want to be in a different place where they are now. They don't always have realistic, sometimes unrealistic expectations, and they want to get there as fast as possible. And they think there's a magic pill. Marketing and fitness are very similar in that way.
Yeah, because you get the clients that are like, okay, so we're going to hire you. And then everybody's going to know about our brand. 1 week later, everything's going to work. And you're like,
My business partner refers to it as to like the gumball machine of marketing. Like if I put in the coin and I turn it, then results are going to come out the bottom. Like it's that linear. He's like, oh my God, yeah. No, it's not like that. I've heard of this say that to a group. They nod, but then like they still want it.
I'm glad you have that analogy because Amanda and I call it waving the marketing magic wand. So I mean, we have our own version of that too and our own struggles with it.
It is very real. I don't know what your guys' experience, like being in Calgary, we have a team in Toronto. There is definitely, and I'm very pro Calgary, but we are a little bit behind from a marketing perspective. There's still like you go to Toronto, you have conversations. Clients tend to just be a little farther down the path of understanding. Like I find so much any times in Calgary, you're educating / selling them even on the idea of marketing before you even get to the actual thing you're going to do. And I think Calgary being that it's been very industrial, very B2B, it does feel like there's sometimes more opportunities or requirements for that educational journey here. I don't know if you guys have experienced that as well.
Yes.
There was a pause and a yes.
Well, and I think like the difference for us too is like we work with a lot of clients in the States, and that's the thing, like we have clients kind of all over, and I think you would probably agree, like when you're working with different clients, like depending on where it is, but I'd probably say like Alberta, Saskatchewan, yeah, you do get a little bit of those terms where it's like, especially like last year when COVID first hit, it was like marketing budget / like that was the first thing to go. It's like, we're not doing anything. And then, you know, as marketers, you're like, well, listen, You can have the best product in the world. You can have the best service in the world. But if you don't tell anybody about it, if you don't keep up, Coca-Cola, McDonald's, Nike, these are all world-renowned brands who spend hundreds of millions of dollars on marketing because it's a reminder for people that you still have that product, you still have that service, you're still reminding people. So it's like, no offense, nobody's going to remember about your product and you're not going to get new customers. So it's like, that's why marketing, even in times where everything is like a little bit uncertain, you still need to put dollars into it.
100%, which is a debate or a pitch we've all made, I think, as marketers. So anyways, this isn't about speaking negatively. Marketing is an amazing tool. That's why I got into it because it was so exciting. But there's a lot of education that comes with this role of always giving companies that are really good at what they do the respect that they maybe don't fully understand marketing. And sometimes they know they don't understand. Other times they think they do. Everyone's a copywriter, right? Everyone's a creative director, right?
Well, you have this term, unicorn chasing, where it's talking about like marketing teams need to be all things to all people to deliver on marketing goals. Can you expand on that for us?
Absolutely. I've seen that. Like, I've been involved with ClearMotive for probably since about 2005, involved in more of a senior leadership role and became a partner in the end of 2009, 2010. And back then it felt like digital was coming on board. And maybe it's also, maybe I just have selective memory. What I've really seen in the last few years, and I notice it when we do our job descriptions, like, okay, we're going to go for this role. And I start looking at these roles and I'm like, oh my goodness, like how many things are we expecting this person to be good at? Because it's just like, no matter what, even if you go, okay, it's going to be a digital strategist or a digital media planner, but then you start getting into it, you're like, wow, the amount of diversity and the adaptability. And there's just no way that these individuals can know all the things that show up. And I see this with companies. I'll have someone reach out to me and say, hey, Tyler, we're going to hire a coordinator. We want to pay them 50 grand a year. Do you mind if we send you the job description to just give us your perspective? Literally, that person is everything from a technical specialist, like they can code. They are experts on SEO. They know SEM. They know social media. By the way, they have some design skills. Oh, they're also a copywriter. I'm like, this poor individual is not set up for success because this unicorn model, it's not realistic, but yet it's almost required because of the pace of change that's happening in our industry right now. So creating a culture that allows people to only know a portion of their job, but be supportive so they're constantly learning and that make it okay that they don't know. I see some companies do that well, and I see some other companies really set people up for failure. And I think that kind of hurts everybody, especially the company who's trying to execute the campaign.
You, my friend, are speaking our language right now. Amanda and I have had many, many conversations about this, about how the creative in the corporate world is almost undervalued because no one wants to pay them for the work that they're doing. However, they have to know all these things, like you just said. So I guess my question is, you talked about the pace of change, which, yeah, marketing has a huge pace of change. How do we combat this needing a unicorn, being all things to all people, realistically, when the pace is so fast?
I think that's an interesting challenge. And it's something we've been as an agency working on around the concept of marketing operations, which is how do you operationalize all this through your organization from the perspective of like execution right through to like, how does product planning get involved? So for me, it starts with a cultural belief of that you get things a lot more integrated. Like the pace of change, let's be honest, also often happens because the marketing gets told the day before, the week before the campaign is supposed to go live. Because product planning's been working on it. The sales team knows what their like targets are. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, nobody told marketing. So I think that there's also part of that. And the more you can integrate the fast-paced, hardworking, creative concept of the fact that companies are getting new information really quickly, how do they get out there? I think one, got to break down silos, which is an old story. There's nothing groundbreaking about that statement. But how do you get the marketing team more at the table right from the time that the product was conceptualized right through to where the salespeople, depending again, B2B or B2C, ultimately you're following that journey. The more integration you can get, and the more I think you're willing to give permission for people not to know, because you can go out and find it. But this expectation that you're supposed to have all the answers right now in the room because I asked you, that breaks that model and it sets people up to like really protect themselves versus going, I don't know, but give me a couple hours. I'm really resourceful. I'll make some calls to my network. I'll find out the answer. And at a cultural level, it's easy to talk about. I've seen it fail many, many times in the boardroom where that person gets called out in a way that there shouldn't even have been an expectation that they should know this thing that just happened to come up that day in the room. And I think there's a lot of room for giving people a chance, creating a little bit of bandwidth for that like pivoting to happen quickly because the demand of the customer is there.
Yeah, I mean, you have an interesting perspective on that because you also have an agency. So you know expectations of the clients, but you also know that you need to set up your staff for success. So I have a question about your agency, actually.
Sure.
You have a location in Toronto, one in Calgary. Do you think it's necessary to have that location in Toronto to kind of get the bigger batter clients.
Yep. Well, this question had a different answer in February than it does now. Let's be honest. We started in Calgary, to clarify that. I think a lot of people see an agency that's in both cities. There's often an assumption that it's a Toronto agency that's come west. That was not the case for us. We became agency of record for Honda Canada back in 2011, 2012. And we were the only Calgary agency at the table. We were literally 9 people at the time when we won that pitch. Closest agency in size to us, I think, was 120 people.
Wow.
But in the pitch, we did a little break. It was like one of those full morning pitches, like a real old school, big dog and pony show kind of pitch. And it was great. And it was like, I'll never forget it. But the person who was running the pitch took me aside during the break and said, "Hey, Tyler, we really like what we see here, but I'm assuming there's a slide that says you're going to set up an office in Toronto, right?" Like, wink, wink. Like, absolutely, there's a slide. Like, go quickly, add that slide. So for them, there was literally no way they could, I think, go back to the executive and say, "Oh, by the way, we've got a new partner and they're in Calgary." When some of the best agencies in Canada, arguably, there's great ones in Calgary as well, and Vancouver, Montreal, but Toronto is definitely the hub of marketing. So back then, it was a make or break. If we weren't willing to put an office in Toronto, we would not have won that business. And over the years, as soon as we had an office in Toronto, like a legitimate, not a post office box, or when you Google map it, it's somebody's house, you actually have a legitimate office, companies would give us the time of day very, very differently. Fast forward 6 or 7 months, I'm not sure what that looks like. We just picked up some new business out of Massachusetts, and they could not care less whether we were in Calgary or Toronto or where we were. We did an RFP. They liked our credentials. They looked at our work. They knew our team was remote. They were great with it, and it moved on. So I believe the world is shifting in what I think is a very positive direction. But up to 7 months ago, yeah, we did have to be in Toronto to be able to get the notice, to even get in the room, to get the permission to be there.
Yeah, it was the cred, right? The cred that a Toronto name brings to you, right? But I think you're right. Like, the way the world is shifting and the way that we've all basically work from home, nobody knows if they're going back, or a lot of people, what was it? It's a bunch of offices, Google, Twitter, like a bunch of them have said, "Yeah, we don't care. Work where you work." I think it's a very interesting philosophy that people are resistant to the idea of work from home, because I read this great quote the other day that said, a manager asked another manager and it said, "Why are you so comfortable with your employees working from home?" And he said, "Why are you not? If you don't trust them to work from home, why do you trust them to work from the office?"
Yes. I've heard different versions of that. Yeah. You don't trust your employees, you have another problem that you should have dealt with. Like, that's a problem that was already there.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And I think with the way the world is working, it's like nobody cares where you are now. They care, if anything, the people in the States actually like hiring Canadian agencies because the dollar is better. So it's
immediately like a 30% premium you get on your dollar, 25%.
Yeah, like they actually get really excited. They're all like, "Oh, great, it's so much cheaper." So, yeah.
And I will add to the fact that we are remote first, meaning that we have not been in the office for the past 7 months. Our team is fully working remotely. And I will say for myself personally, and I know there's some team members that miss it and there is a social element, like I don't want to just diminish that, but we had challenges always with the fact that Toronto and Calgary teams would work on the same project. Inevitably, and because we're human, someone would have a sidebar conversation in the office and someone in Toronto would not get that information and it would impact their ability to do work. COVID solved that problem in 48 hours. All of a sudden now everyone's on Zoom, and I've been trying to solve this problem for a while. So part of it is like, I'm thankful in the sense, like, how do I get this one team mind? Actually rolled out a one team philosophy. We looked at our values against working from home. We really made a big deal out of it because I saw it as an opportunity to unite our teams. We now have account directors who are the most qualified to lead Calgary business accounts, and they weren't because of the distance. Boom, overnight, they became the account directors because they were the best skilled, and where their geography was didn't matter anymore to the client or to our team. So it's been a positive for us. So we were able to pivot. Now I just have 2 relatively expensive office spaces that I pay for that we haven't used in 7 months, but that's a whole other story.
And I think it's one that a lot of people can relate to.
Yeah.
I mean, I think constantly about what is our world going to look like when we have office buildings in every single city that are just sitting there empty.
I think you're right. And the wave of Calgary, we already have a significant challenge around that with the amount of basically class A space that's open downtown, which I did see some interesting articles this week, Nicholas Beek from Helsum talking about, like, yeah, this is the greatest opportunity for these tech companies to come in, get this amazing space for a good price. So I'm happy to see some adoption there. But if you fast forward a year from now, when a lot of these leases run out, it's going to be like, this problem has got some time to run. But I think we'll see the world shift, which some good, some bad for sure.
So let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about competitive advantages. So like you said, you are one of hundreds of marketing agencies in Canada. like when you're doing pitches and stuff like that, how are you setting yourself apart to your clients? And then let's talk about it from the business perspective too.
It's a really good question. And it is super challenging to differentiate when you look around and you say, okay, like I could name some other agencies in town, which I won't give them. I'm not going to make it that easy for them. But there are some great companies in town that do relatively similar things. And we all approach it a little bit differently and we all fluff it up a little bit. Like we have great people and we're going to partner with you and we're going to get our data. And everybody's kind of saying the similar. So it often comes down to you're left with fit. Do I like them? Do I trust them? And those are very soft. So I've been exploring quite over the last 6 months. Also looking on, you do your competitive and you kind of look at where your white space is. And we've really leaned in on the operationalizing and execution side of like, let's partner with teams. Let's help you execute. Let's work holistically. Let's elevate your internal team. Those poor coordinators who have 17 KPIs on their dashboards, let's help them and let's support them and make them look like rock stars. And the concept of hardworking creative, for a lot of our work, awards, we chase results. And you really have to understand your client's business to do that. We've all seen those creatively led campaigns that were amazing and beautiful, but did they actually convert? Like, did they actually do the work? But beyond that, I've been really exploring this concept of like, let's get into the hard facts. Like, I'll give you an example. In the last 12 months, our team has been able to get a campaign in market within 12 days of an approved brief. Ooh, that's very structured and very analytical. And when I'm working with companies now, I find that there's an opportunity to start pulling out the real nuts and bolts and to get away from, and I don't want to minimize it, but sometimes the fluffy marketing speak. And everybody does that with ROI and says, oh, well, we were able to get a 20% up or we were able to increase the last. I get that. But again, a lot of agencies do that. I love the concept of relevant selling, which means you really have to truly understand what your customer values. And it's usually not what they tell you at first blush. You know, we want good results and we want collaboration, all the things everybody says. But do they value the ability to do edits? Do they value your responsiveness? Like in the last 18 months, our team has been able to respond to a call or an email within 2 hours. I've said that to some clients. They're like, oh my God, thank God. In my last agency, I'd maybe hear back from them in 2 days. It drove me nuts. But that never comes up in the RFP brief. They never say that that's what they care about. So to me, the competitive advantage filters up and backwards, not from what I think they value, but taking to understand the nuances of what they value. And it's really easy to say, it's really hard to do because you can send out a survey, you maybe don't get it. The real way or probably the standard way would be third-party blind research to find out what somebody values. Not always realistic for small to medium size or even enterprise level, they don't want to do it. Pick up the phone, call your customers. Yes, surveys work, but understanding of where they get excited and where they get frustrated, you can kind of start to read between the lines. And to me, that's where I think any company, whether it's an agency or not, taking the time to really unpack at a very analytical structured level, which sometimes for creatively led agencies is hard because we want the big conceptual and the big idea, but break it down to the brass tacks of what it is they actually value on a Tuesday at 10 in the morning in working with you. And if you can get that to the front of the sales cycle in a way they're like, okay, that stood out for me because I want to work with the company that does those things, whatever that is. It's hard work, but I'm really finding in this cluttered world, that kind of more how we work and what matters to me is starting to break through a lot more. It's required to cut through the noise of all the shiny stuff that's out there, which often doesn't really tell you what it's going to be like to work with that partner, whether it's an agency or any vendor partner.
Yeah, 100%. And I think an unfortunate part about this is that as marketers, we're teaching them these big shiny terms that they think they want, right?
Yeah.
And the second part that's kind of unfortunate is to find out with someone actually what matters to them at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday morning. That often comes with experience and partnership and building a true partnership. So how do you build those partnerships faster to get those answers?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think sometimes, and this is again, not always right, and this is what we've done, like you literally throw the kitchen sink at it and service the heck out of it and get as close and ingrained to what the people on the client side are actually dealing with in their day-to-day and empathizing. A level of empathy and understanding of what, like you do the pitch or what, however you win the business. Hopefully we all hope that it's a relationship and we get to avoid the pitch. Let's be honest. We can sidestep that and really getting into finding out as quickly as possible what is important to them as a business, but then not forgetting as individuals, what struggles are they going through in larger organizations? Are they struggling to have their own voice? Are they struggling to be heard? Is it because they actually really don't know how to do what they've been asked to do, but they're scared to say that because they don't want to lose face in their own organization? And with larger enterprise companies, I've found that to be often extensively the case. Smaller entrepreneur led, you get a little bit more of everybody's inclusive. Larger enterprise, you've got people that are kind of fighting for their own place in the hierarchy of it. And for us, where we've been successful is really connecting with them because they're our doorway into the organization. And you do 10 things and you find out that four of them were what they really mattered. Then next round, you do more of those things. And it sounds very organic, but that's how we found it to be successful. successful of a very intimate relationship with the client to bridge that gap.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. You can't really get around that, the actual building of the partnership. And it's just unfortunate because there is sometimes a lot of trial and error. And that's the same thing that we refer to when we refer to the gumball machine or the magic wand. You can't build a partnership either that way.
Let's be honest, as service providers, they're not adapting to our culture. We're adapting to theirs. And so that partnership, like you say, which is we all the gold standard of what we want, it's like a new hire or it's like team members. They still have to fit a certain set of values. And that's hard as an agency or as contractors or as teams when you're trying to get the work. And that next win is really critical. Sometimes you say yes and you're like, oh, the values don't really work here. And if you don't have that, those initial stages are hard because it's not going to be shiny and perfect. You're going to make a lot of mistakes. And if you're all not forgiving with each other, and I know we're talking very soft right now, but it's a bunch of humans having a messy experience at the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, this is something that a lot of marketers and a lot of agencies don't really want to talk about. You don't want to talk about when you get a client and it's not really a fit for you either. So how do you deal with that?
Oh, that's a really good question. We will work with our team and try to identify who is the best fit. And sometimes that takes time and you'll look like, okay, we've got someone who's leading the account. And you're like, okay, not being scared to move people around. Because over the years, I've definitely, like, people can change, but we also are who we are, especially at a values level. Like, I don't expect people to join the company and change who you are as a person. Like, that doesn't make sense. Yet we try to do it all the time. Now it sounds like we're giving relationship counseling. not being scared to say, you know, and with a company that we've got enough people that we can say, you know what, we're going to work with this team for a while. We're going to see how it works. And if things aren't jiving and if it's like, oh, just get me things on time, or if it's very small, we'll make fixes. Otherwise, we will move people around to try to find a better fit. And being very transparent about that. It's not a punishment or it's not like someone didn't do well. It's being very quick to say, hey, this maybe isn't just the right personality. This isn't jiving. Let's break down what's going wrong, but let's be okay with moving other people in and giving it to the client as a positive. Like, hey, we're going to try a different approach. We're going to fix these things, but we're very quick to come back to when we get any kind of feedback from that from our client. We jump on that in action very quickly with, here's how we're going to approach it. We heard you. Here's what we're going to do differently to try to make it fit. And sometimes that means changing out people that are in the leadership at the account level.
Yeah, fair. So I want to switch gears for a second here. And
sure.
You have a charity. So I want to chat about that.
I wouldn't call it a charity. I would call it more of a initiative, because charity is an official term and that we're definitely not a registered charity. But yeah, absolutely. It's called Red Express. It's something I've been doing for quite a few years. And it's funny. This is the entrepreneur. I'll tell the quick story about in 2008, 2009, I was physically writing Christmas cards. I'm like, this is not adding value. It's the right thing to do. But I'm like, it's the right thing to do with the wrong execution, if you know what I mean. So I talked to a friend of mine. I said, you know, what if we just took the money that we're spending on stamps and sending it out? And I know I'm sounding very old school. I'm putting stamps and sending them out. But that energy, and what if we turned it into actually doing something of value in the community to help people that need to be helped, and then just let our clients know that on their behalf, we did it as our way of showing that. And I was very fortunate at the time to be introduced to Carlene Donnelly, who's the executive director of CUPS. So Calgary Urban Project Society. I don't know if you guys are familiar with CUPS. If you're not, you now are, and you should go check them out. Amazing organization in town. And I met Carlene for lunch and she said, well, Tyler, because we have an early childhood development program. And a lot of these children, sometimes 2 to 15 years old, they're often in situations where they don't really get to experience Christmas. And for me, growing up in an environment where Christmas was a big deal, my dad was like the Christmas dad. He loved it, and trees and presents and all that. And I was like, okay. So what we did is we got a name, I think at the time, of about 30 or 40 kids in the program, their ages and their name and gender, their name and their boy or girl. And my wife and I went to Toys R Us and we took the money that we would normally have contributed to like Christmas gift baskets and that thing. And we bought toys for all of the kids. And then we dropped it off at CUPS and then we give it to the parents so that the parents could then pass that along to the child at Christmas. And I walked into the first day we did it and it was like the 23rd or 24th before Christmas, and we dropped off these toys and it was great. And as I was leaving, I said to my wife, I was like, she's, what would have happened if we wouldn't have made it or we would have got these? She's like, they wouldn't have got toys. And it just was like the most obvious thing that just hit me so hard. I'm like, oh, this isn't cool. I have to do more of this. So I started telling people about it. I had other companies reach out to me and say, well, we love the idea. If we give you money, can we get involved? So it kind of snowballed from there. So I think we've helped, I think 1,500 or 1,600 kids and over 1,000 families. And I think our biggest year was we raised about 10 grand, which buys a lot of toys and a lot of Walmart gift cards for the parents so they can go buy supplies. And it's an environment where CUPS really takes care of their needs are met. So I felt there was no reason that these little extras or that they should miss out on Christmas, even though they were having challenges, because that people would say to me like, well, geez, what about housing and what about food? I'm like, well, they've got that because they're involved in CUPS. So I've been doing it for 10 years. I can't not do it. It's not even an option. And we're starting to ramp up for it because it's coming. Christmas is around the corner, which feels weird to say that. And I'm interested to see what's going to happen this year, because there's a lot of pressure on our society. It's probably needed more than ever, but yet people are more and companies are more challenged than ever. So thanks for giving give me a chance to kind of talk about it. If anyone's interested, please reach out to me, because this year I think it's more important than ever. It's going to be challenging, but we're going to do it no matter what. It's not even an option.
That's amazing, because I think, yeah, like you said, a lot of companies would probably pull back from something like that at this time of year. But it's really great that you guys are still pushing forward and you're still going to make all the efforts you can to help people out. So
it's so fun to show up. And often the donors that have got involved will come with, will go to CUP, and it also exposes a lot of people to the amazing work they do. CUP sometimes I think is a really best kept secret. They do phenomenal work, but they, again, like a lot of Calgary companies, they're not out there telling their story. They're too busy doing the thing. And that we go and we see the kids and we see the families, and it's just such a great experience. Sometimes we all give, but when you can see it and like touch the outcome, like it's, there's something about that that just, yeah, it's awesome. Warms my heart every time. It makes me smile just thinking about it.
It's the story, right? Like then you can go and take that story of your experience and go tell somebody else, and then that person and that company can get involved because they've felt your passion about it, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So let's give you a chance then to tell people, if they want to get involved, where they can contact you at.
Well, check out redexpress.ca, where we talk about a little bit what we do. But the best thing is just drop me an email. I'm out there. I'm available. I'm on LinkedIn, Tyler Chisholm, or just tyler@clearmotive.ca. Email me directly. Happy to chat with you about it. Jump on the phone. See what makes sense for your situation. Because any companies that donate, we also put together an e-newsletter for them. We do up all the creative assets and then give it to them to make it really easy for them to share with their network. The advantage of having an agency behind me. I get to do all the cool stuff. I get to make it look great all the time.
Well, no. Yeah, you get to do all the fancy things. And you know what? Frankly, a lot of not-for-profits have that kind of ability to do that. So we are a world of like, give me that post, give me the email, give me the Instagram that you can share, and let's get it out, right?
Absolutely. Helping out, yeah. Using your strengths was for someone else might just be not even an option for them, to your point.
Totally. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Content Call Out today, Tyler. So many good points. And I'm so glad that we were able to talk about Red Express as well. Like you said, we can find you on LinkedIn, your email. Is there anything else that you want to plug or anything else you want to talk
Absolutely.
About?
Check out Collisions YYC, my podcast. A great little window into what's going on in Calgary from the perspectives of our leaders, to our entrepreneurs, to our academia. It's got a really good cross-section. But what I've heard from a lot of people is that, like, wow, I had no idea that was going on, which to me is the greatest compliment, because then we're meeting our objective of getting things out in the limelight so people can get excited about all the amazing things going on in Calgary. So Collisions YYC, or Tyler Chisholm on Instagram as well, Tyler Chisholm YYC. You can find me anywhere. Just punch in Tyler Chisholm. It'll come up. It's the beautiful world we live in. Everyone's like just two keystrokes away.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, man. We really appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thanks, Kayla and Amanda.
Bye. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to the Content Call Out today. That was such a great episode we just did with Tyler. I love, love, love entrepreneurs from my home city. It makes me so excited because we're a city that was always deeply rooted in just one industry. So hearing his perspective on marketing and diversification and all kinds of things was really, really awesome. It was also really great to talk to someone else who has a podcast and about the guests and the process and how to make it work. So Amanda, what did you think of that conversation?
Tyler's podcast, Collisions YYC, where he talks to such a variety of people that highlight all the things that we're doing in Calgary. I love it because I feel like it really challenges the view that we're all about oil and gas, and it really focuses on the other things that we're pushing forward. So I really loved it.
The other thing I really liked too is when he was talking about when an agency and partner relationship might not be a fit. And this is something that I think we all avoid talking about in marketing. And it was really great to get his insights on how to handle that.
100%.
So thanks everyone for listening. Go ahead, give us a follow, give us a like, give us a subscribe, and give us a rating. And we'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.